home of the stars, through the airwaves and on the big screen. Live from Hollywood, it's Rated LGBT Radio with your hosts, Garrett Miller and Rob Watson.
I'm Rob. And I'm Garrett, and together we are here talking on Rated G Radio's Thursday night episode of Rated LGBT Radio. Rob is here, but he's trying to get his computer restarted. When I popped into the show a couple minutes before showtime, it sounded like he was underwater and gurgling. So he is trying to reboot his computer, and I guess one of his sons messed with the microphone. So we're going to see if that will get it fixed. So Rob will be back in just a couple of moments. So before we have Rob join the program, here's where we've been for the week, and here's where we're going. Yesterday, we did our morning show with Rebecca Fisk, our intuitive psychic, and she took listener calls. If you called in on that broadcast and want to go back and listen, of course, we're always available on demand. And you can get the show on Apple's iTunes as a podcast under the global banner of Rated G Radio. The most current 300 episodes are there for your downloading pleasure, and I highly encourage you to go do that. On tomorrow's Friday dance party, singing sensation Matthew Paul will be joining the show. This is his second appearance. He actually came back on in sometime in 2013. I don't remember the time period. I know that he was on there because I went looked at the date that I got his last song, Sex Sells, which I played the heck out of. He's got a new single called Drive, and Matthew's going to be our guest in hour one, and we're going to play Drive at least a couple of times and probably play Sex Sells, which is always a fun song. It's, you know, they're club dancey type of songs, and hear what's been going on with Mr. Matthew Paul in the first hour. Next week, we're back to five shows next week. I've been taking a couple of days off Monday, Tuesday-ish as time and guests, conceding will allow. It's summer, you know, and I wanted to have a little bit of a summer vacation. And so I've been doing three shows, the Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday show. And so next week, we're back to five. Real quick, I see Rob's here, so we're going to get to him in just a second. But next week on Monday show at 6 p.m. Pacific, I've got Peter Jude. He is a voiceover artist. He's just finished the voiceover work for Kathy Porter's book called Earth's Final Conflict, a science fiction novel that is really cool. And so we're going to hear what's been going on in Peter's world. On Tuesday, I've got Leonard, and I'm going to so screw up his last name, Szymczak, but it's S-Z-Y-M-C-Z-A-K, Leonard Szymczak, and he's the author of a book called Kookaburra's Last Lunch, or Kookaburra's Last Laugh, excuse me. We're going to talk to him at 8 o'clock in the morning. Now, what happens after on Tuesday is really cool because I got a call to go back and film more of a TV pilot called L.A. Cougars, and I play a quarterback. And I filmed my part, what I thought was my part, a couple of Sundays ago, and they called today and said, we'd love for you to be in more of the show. Can you come next Tuesday? So after the show next Tuesday, I'm going to race out to the set and film my role. I get to be a judge picking what are called the Cougarettes. They're going to be the cheerleaders for the LA Cougars football team. And as the quarterback for the team, I'm going to pick the cuties to be, shaking their thing. I guess that's what's going to happen. Rob, let's see if your connection is better.
Let's see if I'm back fully.
That sounds pretty good. Yeah.
Go. That, what a reboot will do for you.
I'll tell you what, you know.
Yeah.
Right before the show, I have this. I do like a clear the cache. I do a disk defragmenter type of a thing on a disk utility. I think it's probably something else on a Mac. I clear the history. I do all of that stuff. For some reason, anytime you do a lot of streaming, because I watch Netflix at night or right. Do this show, it ends up like, I don't say screwing things up, but it just screws stuff up. And it's just much better if I do a reboot of all of that stuff right before the show.
It does. And you came on like at the last minute tonight, and I was sending you messages, and and you were like, yeah, it's all right, I'll be there, don't worry, I need you on for me.
Oh, okay. Well, if you say that, because it's like, well, you know, we'll talk on the show, so we got a whole hour to chit chat. So from a technical standpoint, I'll make sure I'm on 5 minutes before, but glad you're here, Rob. You sound fantastic.
Well, you do too. So
now there we go.
Here we are.
Yeah. So I've been telling people what's been going on. One of the things that I don't think I've really played up, and I'm going to be honest, just because I wasn't sure how it was all going to play out. Saturday night, I get to be the announcer for this children's music education fundraiser called Live the Dream Tour. And it features, oh, holy cow. I mean, it has so many people that are going to be there. We've got Chuck Murphy, Ron Deuce, Connor Chi, John Mullane, Melissa B, Bob Malone, Nicole, and then the Emotions. You know, like the Emotions? You got the Best of My Love? They're headlining act for this event, and I get to be the announcer for this. Now,
be very good at that.
Well, I was kind of worried because I hadn't had any rehearsal. I hadn't, and the three meetings I had with the people that they told me to talk to canceled every single time. And, you know, long story short, so I went up on Tuesday to go visit with the people in, you know, just to, you know, and the person I was supposed to meet, by the way, didn't show up, but that was neither here nor there because I met with what turns out to be the MC. Now, this is the nice part because I thought I was going to have to be the MC of the event. And this thing's happening in like 2 days and I'd have like no practice, no rehearsal, no nothing. I just have to announce it. So, you know, all I have to do, Rob, is go like, coming up next, Rob.
Right. And then, except I won't be there. But yeah, so, no, then, got it.
And I'm like, that's all I have to do. Yeah, that's all. I said, I can do that. So I'm really excited.
And so you're actually rehearsing it right now.
I am. Well, you know, I have to practice a little bit with the microphone. So, ladies and gentlemen, Rob Watson.
Oh, okay, thank you. And thank you. I thank all the little children out there. Yay. So
well,
have you been watching the convention?
Well, I'm going to finish the story real quick. So this all came about because Nicole, who is a Billboard chart-topping dance recording artist, I mean, like legit and everything. She's been on the show. She's a big fan of the show. And her brother, Wallace Hall, have put this on as a fundraising gala, and it goes to support education or music education for kids around the country. So I'm really excited to be part of their inaugural event, and it's going to be really awesome. But let's talk politics for a second.
Well, that's actually politics is going to be the subject of out in Santa Cruz this week too. So just, you know, heads up there.
Well, we'll have our version, and then, you know, we're actually not listening to the Trump speech live, so we'll probably see or hear part of that afterwards. So we could probably talk about some of the things that have been going on. Anything that's really striking your fancy?
Well, it's just weird. I mean, the conventions are always a little hard to take. I mean, they're over the top, and the Republican one has always been difficult for me for a lot of reasons. I mean, the last convention, which seems a lifetime ago just because of how much has changed in my life, I was actually at my parents' house in Long Beach. And that was 4 years ago. And just, you know, in that time, my parents have declined incredibly, and they are now in what would be affectionately termed an old folks home right now, and completely oblivious to the fact that a Republican convention is going on. But at the time, I was in the other room actually writing, and my mother kept coming in saying, you know, you need to come in here and watch this. You're being closed-minded. And it's like going, well, no, I don't think torturing myself as being close-minded, but, you know, it's whatever. But last time we had Clint Eastwood talking to an empty chair, and that was kind of the absurd
that
moment.
That was weird.
Yeah. Well, this one was Mrs. Trump doing a speech and having a very good, recognizable portion of it plagiarizing Michelle Obama. And that is just so strange on so many levels.
I watched that part live because I don't know if it was, I think it was Tuesday night or something like that. I watched it.
Right.
And I'm probably not going to be your friend after I say this, Rob, but I'm just going to say this.
Well, you're always going to be my friend. So,
okay. Yeah, well, we can agree to disagree and we'll still respect each other.
Yeah.
So here's the thing, you know, somebody obviously wrote the speech for her, and somebody, you know, so all of that put aside, the fact that what has turned out to be usually a very private woman came onto a national stage and delivered a speech and, you know, forget about the who wrote or whatever, because, you know, her job was to sit there and read the speech that somebody wrote for her. did, I think, a very good job. And then everybody wants to give her just a rash of crap. When, you know, if put in the same spot, I don't know how well they would do. And you know, they tend to also forget that, you know, this woman also speaks five languages. So it's like English is not her first language, and they want to give her a really hard time for coming up. And I think being, you know, being very brave in doing this, because you can say, oh, she's posed naked and she's been a, you know, this model or that model. That's completely different than standing on a stage in front of, you know, hundreds of millions of people, you know, watching this worldwide. And delivering that when she's not a quote unquote, you know, actor or performer or a speech giver on any regular basis. So I give her big props for that. Now, you know, outside of that, for, you know, the alleged plagiarism and things like that, I'm not a, I just roll my eyes and go like, come on, can you be that dumb?
Well, and okay. So first of all, we're still friends. I love you. Love you.
Okay.
So. No problem. I don't disagree with you. I mean, her walking out on that stage in a venue that she was not familiar with and in front of a huge number of people, you know, that's not for everybody, and it is hugely intimidating. The thing that was shocking to me is not her. It is everybody in the background who kind of set her up. That were,
yeah,
first
right.
of all, you know,
that,
so
yeah, yeah.
lazy to it just, you know, I'm in marketing, you know, for a big company, and mm-hmm. we write stuff and we put it out, and it goes through such scrutiny,
right
down to words and this and that. And, you know, is this appropriate? And, you know, all that. And that's to sell product. It isn't about policy or anything big. So this whole background thing of where her speech was written in a way that it wasn't vetted by three or four people before she even got it.
Heads should roll.
Check it to make sure that it was original, and, you know, all of those things is, for what they're doing, is pretty shocking. And it's shocking not just because it's the Trumps and reality TV and all that stuff. It's shocking because if Donald Trump were to become president, these are the things that people go to war over. You know, the misspeak in a speech on a world stage can create such schism that it can be devastating.
Yeah,
and to have his inner circle so devoid of detail that they let this happen. So that was the first part of it. The second part of it, and this is on her, that when the questions came up, now, whatever happened in the background that caused this to happen, it is indisputable that it did happen. I mean, the words
right.
that were repeated were not insignificant. And once that did happen and she walked off stage, and then the next morning she's asked about it, for her to say, oh, yeah, I wrote the whole thing with very little help. Okay.
Yeah.
Honey,
the coaching there, horrible.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, okay, that was not smart on any level. So
at all.
Her being set up, her, yeah. you know, she, quite frankly, she handled that probably better than Sarah Palin handled the
oh,
whole
yeah.
process of being interviewed as a vice president. So, you know, it's all relative. So it's not really faulting her. It is more looking at the background of the campaign that was so lazy that it couldn't protect her more is to me the most shocking.
Yeah, I agree. Completely
yeah.
agree with you 100%.
So that's my thing on that. And to that point, there's this weird, and since we're LGBT and this LGBT show and commentary, here's some weird commentary. Is the convention isn't quite sure what to do with us, because it is, and it certainly, and this goes back to the candidate himself, it is certainly completely devoid of any kind of leadership from Donald Trump in this regard, because the convention itself and the charter,
their platform.
Platform. There you go. That's the word. Old age is seeping in. The platform is more anti-gay than a Republican platform has been over as long as anybody can remember. And that is saying a lot, because it has always been one that was absolutely cringeworthy in terms of LGBT people. But now in their platform is a wish for us all to go through conversion therapy.
Ugh.
It is rolling back marriage. It is, you know, the restroom thing on steroids. It is as draconian an LGBT platform as you could possibly imagine. And, you know, Trump just ignored it. He didn't care. He didn't care that that's what they were doing. Whether he agrees with it or not, he didn't care. And that, again, from somebody who wants to lead our country, terrifies me. Absolutely terrifies me. So there's that. And then to put Ted Cruz up there, it's reality TV. It's like, this was like watching, you know, the Kardashians come to politics.
Right.
And that's what it was like. And I'm not ready to give over my country to reality TV. I'm sorry.
We're already there.
Yeah. Well, I want it back.
Yeah, well, you can want a rotary dial phone and, you know, the three network channels back, and this is not going to happen. You know,
right.
This is years and years ago, John Ritter made a movie as like Americathon, and I think six people saw it. I was one of the six, and he played a president of the United States that lived out of his car in Los Angeles. And in order to bail out America, they had to have a fundraiser, like a telethon, to, you know, bring America back from the brink of, you know, financial ruin or something like that. Did you ever see that movie?
I remember it. I remember it very vividly. I don't think I actually ever saw it, however.
I paid money and went to see that in the theater, and I actually thought it was kind of cool. And again, I was one of the six people that actually did see the movie. But, you know, it's, you watch the movie, then it was either late 70s or maybe like 80, 81, something like that, when the movie hit the theater. And you watch that movie at that time, and you're like, there's just no way that America could be like that today. And, you know, here we are essentially 40 years later, and, you know, Donald Trump obviously has a ton more money, but, you know, it's that reality TV concept of, you know, providing government to you that is, you know, engaging to the dumbed down masses. And I'm kind of shocked that, you know,
right,
here's where we're at, but in the same breath, I'm not shocked, because we've just, you know, and we've talked about this before, as wonderful as social media is, because if social media didn't exist, I would not know Rob and we wouldn't be doing this.
That's true.
There are a lot of people
that result of social media, right?
Well, there's a lot of good stuff that happens, but, you know, there's a lot of people that think it's okay to forward or post memes that are stupid or derogatory. And I'm not trying to get on any kind of soapbox, people. So don't, you know, don't even go there with me and say, oh, you're so high and mighty. And yet I'm not doing that. But you see people post these, you know, ridiculously dumb things, and you're like, oh my God, you're drinking the Kool-Aid, or at least you're stirring the Kool-Aid container and giving Kool-Aid away. And this is not, you know, this does not help anybody. And you think you're cute, and you think you're funny, and you think you're whatever, and it just ends up perpetuating the dumbing down of our society. And I'm so
I strongly agree with you. I strongly agree with what you're saying, because that what happens is with those memes is those memes become the ground zero of communication. So
people assume those memes are also journalistic integrity. And accurate.
Right.
I read it on the internet. It must be true. I know it seemed outrageous,
but it was a meme. I saw it.
It was a meme.
Yeah. Now, I have to say, there were a few examples of things that I thought pushed the art form to a high point, which was like when Donald Trump said, you know, the gays like me, ask the gays. And they did all these little Vine images on Twitter where it was like, you know, these perfect classic things of people making kind of these shocked, yeah, right, faces. That was pretty classic. That was.
Well, you know, here's the trouble. Even on the ones that make that are the dumbing down of America, I will tell you, I do laugh at them, and I do find some of them funny. But I refuse to, you know, stir the jar.
Right.
I'm not going to stir that jar of Kool-Aid and give that out for people.
Well,
and
to
I
your
feel.
Point, though, yeah, it's the thing though that I'm, my takeaway from what you're saying, which I really really think is core to the point, is that when, let's just say for sake of argument that they have a point, you know, when they're lying and they're presenting a falsehood, and you know, because it makes a quippy, you know, image, you're right, that is horrendous. But where the debate in the country, where we're talking about complicated issues and you have to get it down to this quippy meme, whether it's factual or not, as your means of communicating it,
oh,
that's bad.
It's
so
horrible.
Bigger than that.
I agree.
So, yeah.
Once again, Rob, I thought we were going to disagree, but we're completely on the same page.
Not happening. So where things might get a little contentious is this Saturday on out in Santa Cruz on KSAO.com, 7 p.m. Pacific time, 10 p.m. Eastern. I, as my special guest, will have Brody Levesque. Brody is probably one of the top LGBT journalists in the country. He was a senior editor for LGBTQ Nation. He has been on the street beat. He knows everybody, very connected into government and politics. And we are going to get his take on the convention. He also wrote an article this week with the New Civil Rights Movement. And we're going to talk through his article about where he sees the biggest core issue in America today. And we'll go over that on the show when he is on. So that is actually going to be a really great show.
Well, each of your shows, I mean, you don't have a slouchy show.
I try not to. And you're right. Every time I start the show, it's like, this is going to be a fantastic show. And I know I said that last week, but this one is too. So yeah, I'm proud of that show.
Different shades of fantastic. Absolutely. Yeah. But, you know, you do important radio. I think, you know, for me, selfishly, I just think we sit and talk for an hour. But when I listen to Out in Santa Cruz, it's like I'm listening to important radio that really does kind of matter on, you know, the variety of subjects and guests that you have on there. So it's, I think that's
we cover
a strong testament. Yeah. But, you know, we're more the light, fluffy, fun-ish type of, you know, in that league. And you and Steph are, you know, more hard-hitting I don't want to be hard-hitting, so I'm not looking to try to change what we do. But I admire what you guys do on a Saturday night that you could be doing anything else, and you bring interesting, compelling radio to the world on LGBT topics. So I thank you for that.
Well, thank you. And I your support and your kind words around that really motivate me and, you know, help keep me focused there too. So,
well, make it happen, Rob.
I will.
Okay.
So I have a fluffy subject for you.
Right on. It's about time.
About time. Have you seen the new Ghostbusters?
I've not seen the new Ghostbusters.
Well, we saw it. Boys and I went out to see it because we did not care. The controversy of it caused quite a stir, and I still don't get it. And maybe it's because I am not that tied to gender issues or genderizing things, but the fact that they made this with a female cast really frosted a lot of people.
Isn't that dumb?
It's so dumb, especially when you see it, because it is
funny.
Great. It is a great movie. I loved it. The boys loved it. They can't wait to see it again. Highly recommended. The actresses in it are just spot on. They bring their own personality. It is a remake. It is not a sequel or that type of thing. And I just thought it was great. It is so worth going and seeing.
So there you go. Go see Ghostbusters. So since we're talking about all these things that just kind of bug us tonight. I don't know all the details, but the black lady in the movie, or African American, whatever politically correct label you want to put, you know, she's a great comedian. She's on, I think, Saturday Night Live, and she's absolutely fantastic in everything I've ever seen her in. And people are giving her a hard time for some reason, which I don't understand. And then I think I saw another thing, you know, you can't please anybody anytime, anywhere, apparently, because there were people saying, well, she should have been one of the scientists. And you know, why did they have to make her, you know, that character? Why couldn't she have been this character? It's like, just shut up and enjoy the movie for what it is. You know,
I hadn't heard that.
I've
seen great reviews of her because she was very good. And yeah, it's, you know, they're really, well, but you know what? It's funny because I think that goes back to the original Ghostbusters, because the
right.
African-American character in that, she really paralleled that character.
Right.
And you could go back
if
and
you
say, why it wasn't
really do
this.
You could say, well, how come we didn't have a Hindu in the movie? And how come we didn't have a lead Hispanic, you know, female in there? And where was the Korean-American? And then... You know, if we want to do a movie with Ghostbusters and make it all, you know, Hindus or Muslim or Japanese or American Indian or whatever, just have it be interesting and fun. I don't really care who these, you know, what their backgrounds are and what, you know, a little thing that you self-proclaim somebody didn't do to your satisfaction. Just let it be an entertaining
right.
product. You know, the same thing. I don't have a problem. This is my white entitled America speaking here, but I also don't have a problem with five white guys, you know, because we've seen a lot of five white guy movies that were really
right.
crappy. So
right.
just make the movie good.
Yeah, no, I totally agreed. We could actually do it in reverse if we wanted to, because the one character in the movie, the director has said, even though it doesn't really come up, I mean, their sexual orientation of any of the characters is not
right.
really, well, it is a little bit, because they hired this secretary who is played by, I think it's Chris Hemsworth, who played Thor in Avengers. I mean, he is.
Yeah,
like,
you know, humana, humana,
yeah.
humana.
Yeah, humana, humana. And the humana, humana factor is played up in the movie, and one of the Ghostbuster characters is just all gaga over him. So, you know, put her into the heterosexual category. But the other one of the characters, the director has said, is in his mind is completely a lesbian. So we need to go back to the original Ghostbusters and go, okay, which one of those do we get? Is, you know,
right.
Man. Which
I
one's
don't want
gay
any
man
of them.
Guy? Yeah. So
that's
you don't mean. Want any of them?
No. You can keep them. I'm not on a recruiting effort here.
Oh no, no, me either. Because
I don't
you
need a
never
new
know who you get when you do that. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Could be a
Holy
little scary,
cow.
Yeah.
Oh. So. Yeah, well, I'm glad you guys like the movies. I'm just kind of on a budgetary hold for all things until I get, you know, my job situation all kind of figured out. So there's
right.
no discretionary money going out to doing anything. So put gas in the car for, you know, meetings or events, and then, you know, food and rent. That's it right now. So movies,
right.
They're not out there. So, you know, that'll come down the road. I'll probably go to the $3 theater when it hits that in a couple of months.
Well, it was fun. We I don't know. It's one of the things with the boys, because they're so into their video games now, and so when I actually get them out, and we're sort of like a big video game in front of us with popcorn and stuff, but it's still a moment I get to hang with them.
Yeah.
And, you know, gives us something to go over, because I don't get the video games. I am so not getting the video games. I actually asked them. Like last week or so, I went in and said, just why this Pokemon Go is like so huge now. Why aren't you playing it on your Xbox? And he looked at me with that look that you get when a kid looks at a parent like, oh my God, my dad just said the stupidest thing on the whole planet. And he goes, Dad, that's only on iPhones. And it's like,
yeah, come on.
Never mind. Sorry.
Yeah.
And then the next day he asked me for an iPhone, a $500 phone, so he could play this game. So,
like, of course. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, no. So to your point earlier about the memes and all that, I'm afraid Pokemon Go is going to drive our next wave of wherever we're going to go. So next presidential candidate may be a Pokemon.
You know, as long as it serves the greatest good for the most people it possibly can in this country, I'd be fine with that. That's fine. Let's vote for Pokemon, you know. But I will tell you, you know, all the hype that went the last week or two that Pokemon has been out, I'm not really seeing a lot of it in the last few days. So I don't know if it's starting to die down a little bit. You know, it's one of those, you know, it shines, you know, really, really bright when it first comes out, and but fades quick. I wonder if that's going to happen here.
It may be like, and I didn't get involved in this either, but I know when I joined Facebook, so many people were into some of those games on their Farmville or something like that on Facebook. And I kept getting these weird invitations to, like, you know, so-and-so wants you to clear a barn with her. And it's like going, okay, I'm definitely not into the barn clearing thing. Thank you very much. You know, it's like, man. So I avoided that. So I'm avoiding – this has actually deterred me from switching over from my Droid to an iPhone, which I was considering. But I do not.
Okay, let's talk about how sad this is, that the only reason you would not switch from a Droid to an iPhone is because you don't want to have to play Pokemon.
No, it's you know, just the threat of it somehow invading it that I might even – be remotely tempted. I do not need that distraction.
Okay, fine. Yeah. Well, yeah, it's good to know your limits. I appreciate that.
Yes. Well, I already social media has given me this artificial ADD thing going on, and I'm, you know, I have enough of that. So.
Okay. So what do you guys have for your junk food Wednesday?
We went to Taco Bell. That's my son's favorite, and I try to keep him out of it.
Not the taqueria, it's Taco Bell.
No, it's Taco Bell. The taqueria is actually really, really good Mexican food, but you know, Taco Bell is like this cardboard facsimile of. And anyway, but he loves it, and he wanted it, and we got a really cool picture out of it.
Okay, so what do you order when you go to Taco Bell for you?
Yes. Okay. Boy, did you follow me around? It's like I feel like I've been my dirty little secrets are showing here.
Yeah. Well, so, I got the webcam. I've got that Republican DNC or RNC drone following you around, so I can comments about
it. Here's what it found out. Here's my little scandal. So Taco Bell is our Taco Bell sits very nicely in this parking lot. It happens to sit right in front of a very good sushi restaurant.
So
Daddy's Taco Bell was calling the sushi restaurant as we were driving over, because they take about 20 minutes, and ordering two summer rolls, which is this fresh fish wrapped in cucumber, and then running in and feeding my kids Taco Bell and taking their Junk Food Wednesday picture, and then stepping out and picking up my sushi rolls to go. So that was my Taco Bell.
Very smart.
So, yeah, caught red-handed. Jeez, I didn't get away with that.
No,
that's amazing.
Okay. I will tell you, though, what happens, this is why I can't eat Taco Bell, because if I eat one Taco Bell, I want to eat 700 Taco Bells. And the thing that I love most, more than anything else in the world, is, at least at Taco Bell, is a Crunchwrap Supreme with six of the extra spicy spice packets you know, poured into it and then put back together and then eating them down. Because when I used to do this, and I always remember, is when I'd be driving out to Silver City, New Mexico from Phoenix. I had to do this in a one-day trip. It was a 720-mile round trip in one day. Totally not safe, but this is what I did. And I would stop in Thatcher, Arizona at the Taco Bell there and get 3 Crunchwrap Supremes and a large Diet Pepsi because I was watching my weight. And then I would, you know,
I do it too. I love it. It's all about the diet soda.
And then I would eat the Crunchwrap Supremes on my way to Silver City. Now, so that was, if that wasn't bad enough, because that's enough calories really for like 2 days of what I needed calories for. On top of that, then they would have a Dairy Queen in Silver City, New Mexico. And on my way back, I would always get 5 double cheeseburgers and eat those on my 6-hour drive home. Oh, yeah. But I remember, I weighed 50 pounds more than I weigh now.
I think
we're going to
keep you out of Junk Food Wednesday. That would not be a good thing. Yeah.
No, because it's just, once I start, I don't stop. And it's kind of like, this is why I also don't drink, because people say, oh, you could just have one drink. Well, I could, but that's not my personality. My personality is, if I have one, let's have 40. So for me, let's have me too.
I mean,
one
Crunchwrap, that's
why I'll have 40.
Yeah. That's why, as you know, I don't drink either. And,
right,
and haven't for literally decades. But
yeah, was it 27 years or 25 years, something like that?
Okay, this is why I won't pick up one Pokemon right there.
Right. Yeah,
which you just pointed out, because I'm seriously worried that I'll be the guy that you hear on the news that broke into a zoo, or you know all the other bizarre things people are doing.
But you know what will happen is that you will have stumbled across Pokemon long after it's been popular, and they're like, it's that sad man who's now playing Pokemon for the very first time, and you're like the only one playing it. So please don't start.
Well, I still have to go to Farmville before I go to Pokemon, and I haven't done that yet. So I may, those may be bullets that I'm dodging. Who knows? But
Well, you know, maybe you know your limits, and that's the important thing. I appreciate that.
I try to. Yeah, that's because when I don't know my limits, then they let me know my limits. So
right.
It gets kind of weird. So how is the song? I owe you an article. I have not actually been writing, which kills me, because I really need to write. And one of the first things I'm going to write is, you know, we did some notes on Unlike You. How is that song doing?
It's doing really well on 2 independent music charts, on hottestnewartist.com or hnanetwork.com. Same thing. It's number one. It debuted at number one, and it's been there it's been there for over 4 weeks. And when their new charts come out, which will hopefully be soon, it should still be number one. I don't know how I think they took some time off, but hopefully it'll stay number one. I will also tell you, I think I'm going to be named their Artist of the Year on Hottest New Artist.
Right.
So,
well,
but I don't know that for a fact. I think that will be, that's going to be announced. And then on numberonemusic.com, Unlike You has been number one for 4 weeks in a row this week, as of yesterday, on their pop adult contemporary chart. So I'm very excited about that. And again, I have no idea how it stays at number one, because I don't have any influence over anything other than just to say, please, you know, click and listen. And if you like it, share it and do that. And people are doing that in droves. And, you know, the statistics for, and it shows me how many times it gets played every day and how many requests and all of that. So I get a little, you know, metrics off of it. And in 4 weeks, Unlike You, you know, because, you know, Gay Wedding did really well on their charts also, but it didn't, you know, as well as I thought that did, because it was number one for, I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks, something like that. Unlike You, it debuted at number one. It's been number one for 4 weeks this week, and it has almost as many listens as Gay Wedding did over the course of, I don't know, 6 months. So it's crazy.
The really cool thing about this, though, is that it's a surprise for you. Because
it's a huge surprise.
Gay Wedding, you put out there, you put a lot of work into getting its stature, and you know, you even timed it because it was right along the lines of marriage equality and everything else, and it was very well planned. You know, and even Sweat and Testify, you know, you figured that was going to be a hit, and it had a lot of relevance to, you know, working out and you know, a real market for it. And this was a song you just did out of your own heart, and you weren't even planning it. So
no, well, I just knew that I needed to put a ballad out, and the other ballad that's on the album is called Memories That Time Forgotten. It's a song I wrote about my mom, and it's a lovely song from a song integrity standpoint, from how strong it is lyrically and the story it tells. But I hate the song. I shouldn't tell you that, but I hate the song because it's, you know, very emotional for me.
Yeah.
And so the only other choice I had was Unlike You. And I had so many people that were going like, oh my gosh. And I thought, am I just imagining things, or are people really kind of digging this song? And I said, well, I put out three, poppy songs, in a row. I need to have something that's a little bit more down tempo. And that's usually not what you do for a summer song. For a summer song, you have, your really big summer song hit. And so let's do it.
Unlike You always makes me want to run over and give you a big hug and, bolster your confidence, because it really is a song of self-revelation, but almost not believing in yourself. I mean, in a weird sort of way.
It is a lot of that,
Yeah.
It's taking a look at who you are in your relationship and not liking what you see, it's
right.
And we've talked about this before, but if you're listening for the first time, the song is really about the relationship I was in. And, I got sober and, after years and years and years and years and years. And when I got sober, it really forced me to take a hard look at all aspects of my life that weren't sunshine and roses, which at that point was pretty much everything. And, you have a lot of songs that are out there. It's like, oh, you done me wrong, or you did this and you did that. And Unlike You really is about me taking a look at myself going, oh boy, you stink. What are you doing in this? And, you need to not do this to this other person anymore. I think it just came from a different perspective. And I think that's what really resonates with folks, because that's, kind of what they're telling me.
I think that's really astute. And I think that is very characteristic of it. In a very unique way, that it is neither playing a victim nor, I'm going to gather my strength because you've done me wrong type place. It was
right.
More, I can't live up to what you think I am, and I can't play that game moving forward, which is,
yeah, that's exactly it.
I think that is actually something that a lot of men probably relate to very strongly. I think men on a very large scale find themselves in positions where they don't know that they can live up to what they're doing. Women do too. I shouldn't probably put it in one.
Well, we're men, so we're going to be on the men's, platforms.
Right.
Yet.
But in the way that it's talked about in the song, I think
true.
I know a lot of women, especially when it comes to being a parent, feel like they're not living up to the ideal of what their standard is supposed to be.
Right.
The superhuman mother, breadwinner at the same time, in some cases, there are women who are told that they have to be a mother regardless. Sort of leads me to another thing that's happened in the last few weeks. I don't know if you saw it, but Jennifer Aniston wrote a really profound piece on Huffington Post about, the speculation of her being pregnant and just how sick she was of the whole media attention and the media circus, and kind of standing up, not really just for herself, but for against that whole part of the culture. And it was really a very astute article.
Well, love ain't easy.
It's not. So I don't know if I may be breaking the rules here, but I'm asking about a project that isn't happening, but I was really looking forward to, I Am.
So here's the deal. Okay, so I had this remix album that I had all set to go. I mean, I paid for it and everything. And here's what happened, is that the money got to my record label, and And by the way, so it's not the record label's fault. So as I tell the story, it's going to sound like I'm pointing fingers at the label. Trust me, I'm not. So I don't want to hear any complaints. But and everything else that I've done, I always have to, you know, pay for, you know, the service to, you know, get the service done. So, you know, getting the album put up on iTunes, getting my physical CDs, you know, you name it from A to Z, I got to pay for it. And then hopefully I sell enough to make it back. So the guy that did the remix for Sweat and Testify, he's out of like the Netherlands, or I think it's the Netherlands. I don't think it's Norway. I think it's the Netherlands. And he's this big EDM producer guy and does all these remixes and all this kind of stuff. So he agreed to do a flat price for two more songs so I could have that and a couple other things on this new, you know, remix album that I was going to put out June 1st. You notice we're at the end of July. So this is back in, I think, March. So, you know, again, plenty of time to get the whole thing planned, the whole thing. So I PayPal the money to the record label, and PayPal then tells the record label, by the way, you can't have the money. We're not going to give it back to Garrett, and we're just going to hold it for X number of days. Originally, it was 44 days. And I can go through all the details, but the details just aren't interesting because it wasn't just my money. It was my money plus other, you know, people that were, you know, paying to have stuff done. And all of that money's frozen as well. So PayPal has held this money now for a better part of 6 months, won't release it to the label, won't give it back to me. And we're in this limbo thing where I can't get anything done. I'm not in a position to pay to have more, you know, like just mail them a check. I'm not in a position to, you know, pay a second time, and hopefully sometime down the road I'll get the money back for the remixes once PayPal decides to quit being dicks. I mean, I've written a threatening letter to them and the whole thing, and they're just like, well, screw you, we don't have to do anything.
Not going into the detail because you didn't want to, but is there some potentially understandable reason that
they didn't like the email address that that it was sent to, even though I'd sent this for every single other transaction? And they said that because of how the email account was set up with PayPal, I think they said, but you can't accept like money through that particular email address because we don't like you. It was something like that.
Weird.
And so the record label is trying to dispute it and, you know, file a claim and do all of this stuff. But meanwhile, I'm, you know, but a cog in the wheel. And so unfortunately, the remix album is, you know, just sitting on a shelf where, you know, because I can't get the remixes because the remixer already has the songs. I can't get the remixes till he gets paid, because once he gets paid, then I get the music. And then I can release the album. So it's just in this limbo status. And about once a week, I write a letter to the, you know, I write a letter. I ping the, you know, head of the label, say, you know, any new news on, you know, the PayPal situation? No. Any new news? No. Any no. So just to, you know, show you where it's at, you know, I paid for that before I released Sweat and Testify. I paid for it before I did Unlike You. Both of those have come out on iTunes without fail, and people are listening to that, and that's all great. I've done other stuff not having to do with music through that. Never a problem. And it's just only these two songs that I'm going to have remixed. The money that was dedicated towards that is all effed up. So I hate, because I had these, I had such a marketing plan in place for the remixes to come out in June. The songs I Am, and then we were going to be doing Face Front, and then of course Sweat and Testify. And I've got this brand new song called Mother Earth Anthem. It's a ballad. It's another ballad. And if you like Unlike You, you'll love this song. Oh my gosh, it just gives me goosebumps. Yeah. I was hired by this lady by the name of Kathy Porter, and she wrote this fantastic book called Earth's Final Conflict. Well, she's written a second book, Escape from Nuer, N-U-U-R. And then for her third book, which is not done yet, thank God, because I'd be screwed. she wanted to have a theme song for the book. And so she approached me at this writer's conference and says, you know, would you be willing to sing a song? And I've got a rough idea of how I want it to sound. And I said, sure, yeah. So told her how much it would cost. She paid for it, recorded the song. And it is out of this world. And I don't mean to be science fiction, you know, ha, 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 tongue in cheek, but the song is great. It's about this guy who gets kidnapped from Earth. And when he's, you know, imprisoned on this other planet, he can, for some for some reason, I don't know how this works, but he can look back and see, you know, the planet Earth. Now, I don't know how that happens when you're light years away, but you just kind of have to spend this money for this.
Hey,
he looks back
and
he wants to go back to the planet Earth. And so it's his longing for his love of the planet Earth. And it starts out, you know, it's a very sweet song, but as the song builds, it has this, you know, because as he's on this planet, he has all of these people, like millions and millions and millions of these aliens who've never been to Earth, who hear him sing this song, and it becomes kind of like this planetary chant where he's like, Mother Earth, my lady, da 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 da, you know. And so you hear as it builds, like more and more and more voices behind him just singularly, you know, singing the song. And it's like by the end of the song, it's millions of people that are singing the song with him because they feel so connected.
It sounds incredible. It sounds
really, really cool.
Really good. I'm already envisioning the video for it, although how you're going to get to Mars to film it, I don't know. But,
Here's the deal with music videos. Music videos are great, and I think it makes artists feel really self-important, myself included. So, you know, everybody's self-important except for me. No, I'm very self-important too. But music videos cost a lot of money to be made.
Yeah.
And unless you have people who will work on a Coke and a Smile or do it for a favor or possibly work for free or something like that, it is cost prohibitive for most artists to put anything together. And so, you know, you see, you know, I always just say, because it's on the tip of the tongue, the Justin Bieber music videos or the Beyonce music videos, yeah, they got $100 billion in the bank, and doing a $100,000 music video is no big deal. But, you know, for indie artists who, you know, need to work six jobs to pay rent and are struggling to just get out there to create their craft, saying, okay, we need $3,000 to do your next music video, and that's the low end of the budget. We really need 10. But for three, we can kind of do something. It's really, really tough. And so I don't see myself doing a lot of music videos in the future. If somebody wants to write a big fat check, honestly, I will say thank you for that check, but can I use your money to write new music and put out new music? Because I can justify that. I have a hard time justifying a music video. I really will call a vanity project now. I did it for Unlike You, but I also was able to do it for the Coke and the Smile and a lot of goodwill. So it wasn't, you know, a lot of money out of pocket. Thank God.
Although I have to say, you know, I agree with you like 50% because there are music videos that are, they don't really do much for the song. I mean, the song sort of lives on its own, but like the video for Unlike You, I think that really underscores everything that was happening in that song in a very strong way. I would hate to hear that you didn't do that video for Unlike You. I think it.
I would too, because I love doing it, and it tells the story. You know,
right? And I think it. But that's the thing. I think it expands it. And in the case of the song that we're just talking about, why, you know, if I ran the world and everything in it, I would say, you know, yeah, do a video for that one too, because I think the visual story that would be depicted behind that song would really bring the song forward even further.
Okay. So with that, Rob, here's my question to you then. Outside of YouTube and the fact that you can get your grandmother and Aunt Mary and maybe a couple of neighbors and, you know, some coworkers to watch the music video, unless you have a huge following, you can have the world's best music video and, you know, whether you spend $1 million on it or not. And, you know, if it's just Aunt Mary and, you know, your mom and your neighbors that are watching it, it's not like the old days of MTV where, you know, if you're on MTV, holy cow, you know, you're going to be seeing sales go through the roof. You just don't make any money at it. There's not a return on it. And so it's really just a matter of money. And, you know, where's your best dollar spent from a marketing standpoint? If I'm going to have, if let's say somebody gave me $5,000 to do a music video, I'd say, thank you so much. You know, I can probably do half of an album with this $5,000 if I play my cards right. Can I just write 5 songs instead? That would be really, really cool. Would you let me do that? And I would feel more creatively satisfied doing that. And hopefully reach people on a whole completely different level, five different ways than doing a 3-minute and 30-second music video that might be fun to look at, but you're going to really, honestly, probably going to watch it once or twice, maybe three times. But, you know, if you got a song that really sticks with you, it's going to go on your iTunes and you're going to, you know, play it on your playlist on Spotify and SoundCloud. And maybe you're going to listen to it 100 times.
I don't know. I have some debate points, but we don't have enough time for to go around that with on a couple of points on it. Because I do think there are avenues to get video out, but it is like anything else in the social media world. You either talk to this intimate little audience or you hit it right and you go viral. And
yeah. Well, I would love it to go viral. So I just don't know how to do that.
Well, it's, you know, it's just like what I write, you know, it's like there are things I've written. In fact, there are things that I die over. They're personal stories. They're ones that I work on with people telling their story and I put it out there and it gets, you know, a few hundred people read it. Then I write one, Michelle Duggar, and oh my God, everybody on the planet sees it.
Right.
And
exactly.
You hit the vein. It's like there's this pumping energy going on. And if you stick it in right, you get to ride it. And if you don't, you miss it. I mean,
right. And unfortunately there's no book or manual or Excel spreadsheet to go, okay, here's step one, do that. Okay, check. Here's step two, I've done that. Here's step three. Oh, now look, I just sold 1 million copies.
Yeah. No,
it doesn't work like that.
No, it's branded. I mean, it's a lot of things that you know, you got to play right on it, but you're right.
Uh-huh.
So.
Mm-hmm. Well, we got 3 minutes left. Yeah. So what do we want to wrap up the show with?
Wow. Well, one question I have is, have you heard the I Am song, even though you haven't been able to get it?
No,
they haven't even played it.
I don't get anything until he gets money in his hand. So
not even a preview. Wow.
No, because the price that I'm paying, you know, to have these done again, it's a Coke and a smile price. So I'm getting a real good deal. So it's, there's no benefit for him to give me snippets or anything like that. I'll hear something and just kind of like, is this kind of on the right track? But he knows exactly how I want it to kind of come out. So pretty much whatever he delivers is, you know, going to be the remix, and that's what we're going to go with.
Right. Right. Well.
Mm-hmm. I know. I'm disappointed. I'm eager. I'm anticipatory. I'm all those things as well. But I mean, you know, the second that comes back, Rob, you know, I'm pinging you going like, get your phone and download this now.
Oh yeah. Well, especially because the one song I Am means so much to me. In fact, I'm probably set up on it because I can already hear what I want the dance version of it to sound like. So, you know, I may be like, you know, what he did, what? You know,
yeah. Well, now keep in mind that the remixes that are being done are not really for you and me. They're for, you know, clubs and, you know, how club music sounds today, which is honestly not really how you and I would probably listen to remixes.
Well, speak for yourself, Mr. Oldie. Unfortunately,
okay.
That's the club music is what I download. I'm
okay.
I have this.
I like classic remixes from the 80s. You know, when you hear those remixes, I'm like, oh my God, that's awesome.
No. I have the one teenager who looks at me in the car and goes, "Dave, how can you listen to this? Can you turn that down, please?" And it's all the new music. It's new music. It's not like, you know, like my old bogey music. It's, you know, so yeah, I've gone into role reversal with my kids.
Okay. Super quick. What's happening Saturday night on Out in Santa Cruz?
Saturday night, we are going to go through the RNC and get an insider's look and an astute commentary on what's going on in this country by Brody Liberesk, who is a top-notch journalist, and you don't want to miss that show. It will be really, really good.
That's going to be on outinsantacruz.com. And you can listen to that. Tomorrow, LGBT, I don't know if he identifies, but he's gay. LGBT singer-songwriter Matthew Paul with his new song called Drive will be coming back to the show. That show starts at noon Pacific time. And if there's anybody in the LA area who wants to go see Live the Dream Tour, it's Saturday night. There's tickets still available. And it has been our pleasure to do the show with and for you. We will see you live next Thursday night on Rated LGBT Radio. If you like the show, share it with your friends and join our Facebook fan page.
You've been listening to Rated G Radio.